This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
On August 25, 2006, the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors met with five members of the General Assembly delegation representing the Charlottesville area. The purpose of the meeting was to review transportation priorities identified by the county for the 2007 General Assembly session and for the upcoming special session on transportation. Present for the discussion were Supervisors Dennis Rooker, Ken Boyd, David Wyant, and Lindsay Dorier. General Assembly members included Senators Creed Eads and Emmett Hanger, and delegates Rob Bell, Steve Landis, and David Toscano. Butch Davies of the Commonwealth Transportation Board also participated in the discussion. This recording by Charlottesville Tomorrow begins with a call to order by Chairman Dennis Rooker.
So we will now call our meeting to order, Board of Supervisors. The purpose of this meeting is to meet with our legislative representatives. We appreciate you being with us today. This will not be a long meeting. We have a single topic we'd like to discuss with you today, and that's transportation. We know that you're having a legislative session upcoming to discuss transportation and transportation funding. It was something that was somewhat set aside in the last budget to look at a later time. And as indicated in the handout, the first handout that I drew your attention to, like a number of areas around the Commonwealth, we have quite a few projects that we thought, based upon the funding we had some time ago, going forward at a reasonable increase in funding that might match the inflation of projects, would get funded. And that has not taken place. In fact, I'd like to draw your attention to another, I think it's the second handout, it's just with the tables. And as the chart indicates, Albemarle County's secondary road allocation in 1996 was almost $3 million. This past year was $2,142,000. During that 10-year period of time, the cost of construction for transportation projects has increased about 300%. It went up about 50% over the first 5 years of the decade, and then it doubled, and in a lot of cases around the state, more than doubled in the second 5 years. So if you do the math on that, you have about a tripling of the cost of projects. And if you run the math on the numbers that you're looking at here, we have around 28% of real dollars for transportation this year that we had in 1996. So it's an acute problem. As the table indicates, the decrease in not inflation adjusted dollars was 26% over that 10-year period of time. So we consider it a severe problem locally. It's of course impacts areas that are growing population. I'm sure in areas that have no population growth that have adequate transportation facilities in place, they're probably not experiencing the same kind of pressure that we are. But I'm sure that the Harrisonburg, for example, is pretty rapidly growing. Some of the other areas over in the valley are growing pretty rapidly now, and I think that they probably are starting to see some of the key problems that we're seeing here. We grow at about 1,500 to 2,000 people a year. We add about that many vehicles in a year. We have a vehicle for about every person. And we're adding, you know, over this 10-year period, we've added 15,000 to 20,000 vehicles a year to the road. It's something that I think if the state doesn't take on in a serious way, we're going to find that we're not nearly as competitive economically as we have been. Because obviously if people can't get to their jobs in a reasonable time, if people can't get their goods to markets, et cetera, the economy is going to be impacted, and the quality of life for our citizens is being impacted now. One of the things that, just by way of example, there's a handout in here that deals with the Meadow Creek Parkway. And I'd ask you to take a minute and take a look at that. You may be, I'm not certain if everyone in the room is aware of the Meadow Creek Parkway project. If you know the Rye Road area off of 29 North, the Meadow Creek Parkway would connect Rye Road with the Route 250 bypass at McIntyre Road. It's a project that Albemarle County has been putting secondary road funds into for 20 years, trying to get to the point where we would have enough money in that pot to start the project. We had enough money in the pot to start the project, and it's scheduled to be advertised for construction in 2008. What's happened is secondary road funds, this project in the county's portion of it is totally funded through secondary road funds. It's a project that's about 60% in the county and 40% in the city. So it's a joint jurisdiction project. If you look at the table, you'll see that there now is a balance to complete of slightly over $3 million in the county and about $4.5 million in the city, which means that we don't have the money today in the transportation plan to go forward and advertise this for construction unless something is done about transportation money, funding at the state level that will reverse some of these declines in funding that we see. I've got another handout I'll send around. This is from our local VDOT resident engineer. This talks about the timing of the parkway and the fact that it's still on schedule for advertisement for the city and county portion in June 2008. And then in the last paragraph, I've underlined the first sentence, which says, as you know, maintaining the June 2008 advertisement date is contingent upon the identification of additional funds for the construction of the project. Just by way of reminder, in order to make the Meadow Creek Parkway a good functioning project and to continue Route 250 as a good functioning project, a good functioning highway in our community, it was determined that we needed to have an interchange where the Meadow Creek Parkway would come into Route 250. We spent a lot of time working together, the city and county, the business community, others in the community, our legislative representatives, Butch Davies, who's with us today. Thank you for being with us, Butch. Getting together what I think is a very good presentation that we took up to Senator Warner's office and to convince him that the interchange project was a very necessary project to keep transportation flowing in that area of the city. And we were awarded. We got an earmark for that project, $25 million, which was $27 million, which has been matched. The matching component of that's been provided by the state. So now we've got the money for the interchange, but now the money for the Meadow Creek Parkway itself is lagging behind because we've got some secondary and urban transportation funding. One of the problems with delaying projects is the inflation aspect. To give you an idea, the inflation factor on the parkway alone was about $4 million last year. So what happens is we delay the project, it's like chasing a ghost. This earlier table we gave you, the total allocation last year, secondary road funds, is $2.1 million. The inflation factor on our part of the Meadow Creek Parkway was a little greater than that last year. So I think we're just an example of other communities around the state that have significant growth and have transportation systems that are today not adequate to handle the transportation needs of the community. So I think what we're really here today to do is just to emphasize to you the importance of doing something in this upcoming legislative session to ease this problem, to deal with transportation, which today is becoming an acute problem, and we need to look beyond just today. We need to look to the future. You know, the transportation facilities are built not only for today, but to handle the reasonable growth over a period of time. And driving around our neighboring states, I actually find that they seem to be doing a better job of improving their transportation facilities than we are right now. So I will just open the floor.
You're waiting for somebody to start.
Anybody else to jump in? Yes, Rob.
The 96 to 2000, the chart with the comparison numbers. Are the 06 numbers the numbers as of the, make sure I understand, the budget we just passed, or?
Well, you're 06. This would be 05 to 06.
Okay. So this is not, this has no relation to what's coming.
Not
next.
The current budget.
Okay, that's right. Thank you.
Dennis,
I think the current budget is, it might put us over $3 million. If, but you can tell me if I'm wrong, but if the dollars for the insurance premium allocations are kicked in, but even that would put us, we had, I mean, from 1996, Rob, we went up, we were gradually increasing for about 4 or 5 years. We got up to about $4.5 million at one point.
Yeah, the shrinkage is still there, both in urban and secondary funding. Even with those funds,
okay.
It's just not as dramatic.
That follow up with that, just as you know, there's I guess Steve knows the number, 339. Mm-hmm. There's a certain clump of money that's being kept aside for possibly being spent on transportation. Do you know how that would trickle down, broke down to this, what it would come out at if that were spent?
Yeah, they actually have done that, but they've sort of stepped back from it and just held it. I would think that it might get us back to where we actually were last year. Part of what's happened, Rob, is that the cost of maintenance has soared, and it's literally absorbing that money. Not all of it, but a significant portion. So.
I know, Rob, in talking to our resident engineer here, he told us last month that his budget, the budget for this resident engineer office, had been cut from $17 million to $12 million over the last 3 years. A lot of that is maintenance.
Well, and that was the question I was going to have is, I think these figures are helpful, all localities, and which VDOT is sharing this, but the legislature also wants to know, and we don't see, I'd like to also see your maintenance figures and how that has risen. I think that's helpful from the standpoint of, I realize when you've got more for maintenance, you've got less for new construction. And new projects, but the problem is this has happened all over the country too. We're just having every Department of Transportation and the U.S. Department of Transportation are struggling with these maintenance figures, and that's a global economy effect. So I think a lot of folks I've talked to, when you look at figures like this, they realize that you need to do more, but on the other hand, doesn't give the true picture that we are spending a lot of dollars for transportation, but most of it is going now towards maintenance, which is mandated by state law. And the citizens don't necessarily understand that. But to be fair, when we're going and talking to citizens, I tell them, you know, you've got this figure, this is why these projects, but it's because we're spending more on maintaining the road. The other concern I've got...
Can I respond to the first
sure.
part of that? We don't receive an allocation for maintenance the same way we do for secondary
sure.
road construction.
Sure.
That's a district wide or and then I guess it goes from the district to the Charlottesville residency.
But the county receives benefit.
We receive some benefit, but we don't get a budget number that we can spend and for maintenance the same way it would.
And that's what I've asked in the Stanton District, Butch. I've asked the district administrator there, I want to see those figures for the entire area I represent. And I would ask you, as a CCP board member, I'd like to see that for Albemarle and this area that I represent as well, because you've got to look at that picture as well. And then we've got to find some strategies on dealing on how we're going to deal with that. How we ought to look at that. And I think, in my estimation, it's a little, and I'm not blaming Will County because you're exactly right, Dennis. You all are just dealing with what you all get. But for the state and the state legislature, we've got to look at that whole picture. And unfortunately, I don't think when Secretary Homer goes around and talks about this, he doesn't necessarily give the whole picture, at least to the articles and things I've seen. And we've got to look into sum total, not just looking at what's not being built, because it's all a problem. The maintenance is as much of a problem as the lack of money for new construction.
Couple comments on that. One, I don't recall that we really had that big a problem before Butch Davies went on the train. the other, I guess, from a national perspective, Steve was talking about the state perspective. National and state perspective, I think we all are aware and need to become more aware of the dynamic that's out there, and some, I guess, are wanting to see more information on that. But the maintenance isn't growing just because we've decided to maintain our highways in a much more excellent fashion. It's because in Virginia we're accepting in the state system somewhere in the range of about 200 additional lane miles.
300
now, okay, and is up per year. So that's on the demand side, and so we have to address that, and that's our first priority. As anyone knows, you've got to maintain what you've got before you build a new product or put an additional in your house. The other part of it, and I was at a briefing last week on this, and I think it's very real for the whole nation, but specifically in Virginia, we're probably not doing as good as some other states are right now in recognizing the extent of the problem, and that is most of our transportation trust fund at the federal and state level is predicated on a per-gallon tax for your revenue, and the pressure's been what they are since 1986 when we made adjustments. The fuel efficiency of vehicles has increased tremendously, so that your lane miles traveled is increasing significantly. But on the other hand, your revenue to maintain those roadways isn't increasing and keeping pace. And with recent events, it's going to compound the problem as we switch to different fuels and what have you. So we're going to have to address sooner or later a good method for maintaining an adequate revenue stream into our transportation trust fund. We're going to debate probably for the next couple of years on the margins whether or not VDOT is wasting money. Everybody wastes money. We know that. How we can make sure that the taxpayers are getting good value and appropriate mass transit policy. We're going to debate that. But as you suggested there, in the meantime, we're probably going to see inflation eat up some of our ability to build new projects. We don't have no one has a good solution on it right now. It's a matter of a balance, as you're well aware of, with your taxpayers and having everybody understand what needs to be done before you propose a solution.
Yes, let me follow up on one thing Emmett said, and it's something that you all control more so than the state, and that is these new roads that the state takes responsibility for. Localities. And this is where I think there's got to be more of a relationship between the local governments and VDOT when we're looking at regional planning. Because when Albemarle or Augusta or any locality, cities are a little bit different, so you've got to kind of look at them differently. But anytime there's a new subdivision or more people move in, the private developer usually builds the road, and then VDOT comes back and then is responsible. And that's something we're trying to get a handle on. And to be honest, I don't know that either VDOT or the localities do that planning as well as we should, or that there's more connection in knowing what the costs associated with. And I know Albemarle has supported some things related to looking at the impact developments have on the locality, not just from a transportation standpoint, but education and some of these other things. And I think there is support building in the General Assembly to look at some of those issues, especially related to transportation, since that's the hot topic, but all these other issues as well, and that relationship. And I think part of the solution is going to be how we're going to handle that in the future and how we can have localities and VDOT work closely together or have a more strongly related relationship. I'm not in favor, I have to always preface it by saying I want better planning and better cooperation. I'm not in favor of VDOT coming back and dictating where localities could say, we want a road here, we want a road there, because I think that is not VDOT's main purpose. But there's got to be that state and local connection, I think, to solve those kinds of things long term. And unfortunately, I think, as part of this discussion, and Butch and those on the CTB that represent areas that are not as urban as some of the other areas, there's also going to be pressure that I'm a little bit concerned that would change the funding formulas for transportation in the districts. And we've got to be cognizant of the fact that Northern Virginia, Tidewater, possibly the Richmond area, could push to see more of the transportation dollars go towards those areas. And we just got to make sure whatever happens that, from my estimation, it needs to be fair and equitable, but at the same time, try to work within the transportation districts we have now, unless we reorganize that at some point in time and look at changing those. But we just have to be careful.
Well, can I address a couple of things? First of all, we would when we talk about regional planning, you had the bill that was passed last session to try to create better coordination between VDOT and localities in planning. And I think Butch would attest that probably we have this area has done probably as much work in that area as any locality in the state. We have we did a big study we've done several studies along Route 29 in various segments, combining land use planning with transportation planning. We have one undergoing that's ongoing right now called Places 29. In Pantops, we have one going on in Pantops where we're master planning the areas and we're combining transportation planning. And VDOT is a full partner in that process. So we locally are trying to do the things we can to make certain that our planning takes place in a way that minimizes the impact on transportation facilities. And we appreciate VDOT's participation in that process. In terms of better accounting for the impact of development in some way, we have asked year after year for impact fees and adequate public facilities legislation. You know, we don't have the authority today to not approve a subdivision based upon the fact that the roads are inadequate to go to it. I mean, it seems to me to be a fairly basic point, but we, you know, for whatever reason, because of where the various powers are in terms of money contributions, et cetera, and the lobbying groups, they can't seem to get that moved forward. We would love to have the authority to do that, so we could at least, in our community, deal with problems, the immediate impacts to us of development. Today, we don't have the ability to turn down a development based upon the fact that the facilities aren't adequate. We don't have the ability to require development to pay a contribution for infrastructure. So we would certainly welcome that authority. And I guess finally, if the state doesn't really want to take on increasing transportation funding to on a statewide basis, I think we would welcome local authority to either impose a gas tax or an additional sales tax, be subject to public referendum. But we would at least, it would seem to me that if we're not going to, on a statewide basis, provide adequate funds to the localities under the long established kind of arrangement in Virginia, I think that one of the things that just long ago was somewhat decided that in Virginia the localities would build their schools and the state would take care of transportation. But we're still building our schools, and now we're also starting to pay for transportation projects in the locality. But we really, the only revenue source we have that we can control is property tax. And so we would welcome, if the state is unable to take this on in a bigger way, we'd ask you to at least look at giving localities the ability to, in some way, raise the revenues in a reasonable way themselves, other than just property taxes.
If you so did that, though, you'd end up with 134 different transportation systems. And we're not, you know, that we're a common, we're a state, we're a commonwealth. We need a statewide plan.
Well, I agree that what you've got is we've got statewide, and you could allow us people to raise money for secondary road projects, and if you still have the state fund primary. All I'm saying is we have an acute local problem, and we're and if the state isn't going to help, and the state isn't going to help us solve it. With revenues, then where are we going to go? At least give us the authority to deal with it locally.
The state needs to step up and accept its responsibilities as it's been historically defined. The local plan makes sense in Hampton Roads and Northern Virginia where the needs are greater, and the statewide plan won't adequately address the needs. You know, but this, a statewide plan in conjunction with plans to allow some self-help in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads, you know, if we're going to do something, that's we need to go that way. And that's the approach the Senate took this past winter.
Lee, I thought there was the state already had a plan, but it just wasn't being funded.
Well, I mean, the issue of steam pit is pretty important. We had 1986, the last time the funding formula was Jimmy. It works well for everything south of the Occoquan and west of everything in the rural areas. But the truth of the matter is the rural areas don't control the legislature anymore. And if we don't do something with transportation and we don't do it now, the people who do control the legislature are going to change that formula. And if you think it's hard to get roads built in the Culpeper District and the Stanton District and the Salem District and the Bristol District today, you will never get them accomplished in the future. We have the moment right now we have to seize. Or we're going to, you know, we're ultimately going to be so far behind the eight ball, dirt roads, you know, we're going to look pretty good to us.
That's real encouraging. Yeah. I think we need to have a statewide plan. It's got to have a lot of elements to it. I know a lot of people have talked about privatizing opportunities, tolling. I think we've got to have all these things on the table. But in the end, there's got to be a long-term dedicated source of revenue. And where it comes from, I think, has been a debate in the last session. I think that there are some things on the margin that we might be able to do that would help us. And so I wanted to mention a couple. And then Butch and I talked a little bit about this and other folks. We have a revenue sharing plan in the Commonwealth. There was legislation on the table in the last legislative session that would have bumped up the amount of money in that plan that allows localities to access state monies if they match it with local monies. At the end of the day, that figure that started out with, I can't remember if it was an increase to $50 million or $100 million, but it got Jimmy down to, I think, $30 million or a smaller amount, which made it less likely that localities could access the money for anything that was fundamental.
We're getting actually less money this year under that than we got 4 or 5 years
ago. Right. So I think in principle it's a pretty good program because it allows the leveraging of the state dollars for local projects. So I'd like to see us find a way to revisit that and bump up the money. I also would like to see if we could incorporate in the legislation a priority to the jurisdictions who work together to bring down the money. For example, the Meadow Creek Park was a perfect example. If you could get Charlottesville and Albemarle to ante up local dollars together, I think they could should get in the queue in front of an individual locality that has a particular road that they want to have built. The reason I say that is it has the effect of sort of more regionalizing the transportation dollars that are spent. And I think you also get more bang for the buck and more regional cooperation. I don't know if we can do something like that, but I think that might be helpful. I've worked on the Meadow Creek Parkway for 15 years, I don't know. And when I'm looking at these figures, they're giving me heartburn because we're really close, and all of a sudden, we're farther away. I thought we were closer last year. We should have started building last year. We'd have been better off. But those are a couple of ideas that might help at least this project, and I don't know if we can get legislative support for them, but I think we could.
I'm kind of curious about what you are. I know that you're in the process of trying to decide on when you're going to have this transportation summit or whatever you're going to call it, but what's your expectation of what you think is going to come out of that? Because I think getting this back down to our immediate problems here, that's probably of more importance to us right now as to how that tie is going to be divvied up or along the lines maybe, David, what you're saying. What can we expect to come out of that session?
I think it's anybody's guess still, Ken. I don't think anybody around the maybe Emmett or Steve or Groff can answer that question. I know the governor is optimistic, more optimistic than anybody I know about the potential for a positive outcome in a special session. You know, from my perspective, we in the Senate don't have any reason to go into special session until we get something back from the House because we passed things and sent them over there, and they linger in committee. Do you agree with that, Emmett?
I agree the governor's optimistic.
The House has sent some things over to the Senate, and they've lingered in committee, too, or not even been heard. But I think there is, and the statewide polling that was done shows that the public wants something done. They don't want their gas tax raised. And Emmett's right, the gas tax is problematic long-term anyway. It's a sustainable source. There's fuel efficiency. If we look at biodiesel, we look at all sorts of things. There has been some discussion, and I think, at least in my mind, has some merit as something to look at. The problem is I haven't heard VDOT or – I've heard this from the private sector, but I've not heard VDOT or the transportation gurus talk about it, and that is looking at a formula – and this would take a while to do it, so this would be a longer-term kind of thing. But to look at road miles, how far people travel, and getting an estimate, and then you'd pay a transportation tax. You wouldn't have a gas tax. You'd back that completely out, but you'd have a transportation tax based on how many road miles you travel, whether it's private sector, public sector, you know, whatever vehicles. And there's some ideas like that, I think, that have a lot of merit. There's also short-term, at least in Northern Virginia, an idea of looking at tolls and graduating the tolls so that you get people to have the traffic flow better. That could work on 29 or 81 or 95 as well. So there are a lot of different ideas out there, as David said, and I think some of those will come forward. This abuser fee that my Senate colleagues really don't seem to like, at least the leadership, the public polls showed that 85% of the public agree to that. So I think there are ideas out there that have been put forward on both sides, but I don't think that the long-term solution is just going to happen in one session. I think there may be some beginnings of the long-term solution. I think there are some things we can do short-term to provide additional funding, but it's going to be a combination, and I think Emmett said it. It's one of these things that's going to happen over the next 4 or 5 years from the total standpoint of a total solution.
But to get back to my point, though, because I think in this community, Alamo County, we've got 3 main road projects that we'd like to see funded and moving forward. And that's obviously the Meadow Creek Parkway, the Henderson Drive extended, and something with the interchange at 29 and 250. These are projects that are on the books. We're trying to get them scheduled. We're trying to do some kind of planning on them. We're running into a brick wall not having any idea what the state is going to do or what kind of funds are going to be available to us. Is there anything that you all can offer that?
Well, I think there will be some short-term additional funds. Any of those sources that I've just mentioned could raise additional funds. And the other thing, and again, Some in the Senate haven't liked this as much, but to get us over the hump till we get to that long-term, you know, solution funding formula kind of issue, the issue of bonding is a possibility as well. I'm not talking about using that continuously, but I'm talking about using that for a short period of time, at least for two biennials, to get some of those projects started so that you can go ahead and get them going.
Are you talking about bonds on state level? Or
I'm talking about state bonds.
If I can jump in, you know, Emmett said something in the press a couple of months ago that I don't want to jump at, but he said, you know, David and I are pretty much irrelevant. This is a debate between these three guys, and maybe it is. But here's my two cents for it. We are not elected to govern by poll. We are elected to provide leadership to the Commonwealth of Virginia. An abuser fee, the one that came out of the House of Delegates, basically, essentially, an abuser would be a person with a reckless driving ticket. And the way that works, I mean, most of the people I know who have bad driving records, they have bad driving records, they lose their licenses because they can't pay their fines anyway. They can't pay their fines, so what we're going to do is put an additional fee on people who don't drive, can't get to work because they can't pay their fines. We're going to put an additional uncollectible fee there. And if it works, we're going to make them better drivers. And so we're not going to collect. That's not going to be a long-term source of revenue. But from my perspective, it's not even a short-term source of revenue. It's a political ploy. The second point is,
There's not a lot of money in it either. I mean, I think, you know, with the estimate in the Senate was $50 million and the House is $200.
But the Senate's approach to the abuser fee was a little different. Essentially, it would be a reckless driving ticket in the House budget, the House approach. In the Senate, you'd require more points. It would be a reckless driving ticket plus one other ticket. Well, is that an abusive driver, a person who collects a ticket a year? Is that really what you're after? Is that what most people consider an abusive driver? I don't know. I don't know. And I remember in 93 or 94, one of the first years I was in the House, we were arguing about using bonds for building roads. And Andy Guest, who was one of the greatest people I ever served with, I'll never forget this, but you probably remember, stood on the floor of the House of Delegates and said, it makes no sense to borrow money to build roads that are going to have to be resurfaced before you pay off the debt. And it really does. Bonds, in my view, when I came to the legislature in 1992, we were using 1% of our transportation budget to service debt on highways. Now it's about 14%, isn't that right, Butch?
Yes.
We're already relying too much on short-term debt for transportation. You know,
The law allows, the Constitution allows us up to 5%. It's 2% of our total budget that we're using for our bonding capacity. We just had an argument in 2004 about saving our AAA bond rating, and then the Commonwealth of Virginia and some don't want to even look at utilizing that. And I'm not looking at that as a permanent solution. But to get you over the hump to get projects like this built, right. I bet you a dollar Albemarle will say, if you want to use bonds and do it for 20 years for these projects on the list, to get these going and do it now so that people can drive around Albemarle, I bet you a dollar they're going to say yes.
And you might be right. And honestly, if you're in your corner and don't compromise, and Emmett's in his and doesn't compromise, and I'm in mine, and Rob's in his and David's in his, and we don't compromise, we don't get anywhere. It's about compromise.
And that's, I agree.
But here's the other point. We have to do something now. You know, the time is not right put off a long-term solution because the polls say people don't want to pay more. The problem in the House of Delegates, and I think it's not a problem, it's an attribute. You're never more than a year away from a campaign or an election. That's never going to change. The politics are never going to change. They're never going to get better. They're never going to get worse. People starve for leadership, and they're starved for leadership on this issue. And now is the time for us to stand up and say, you know, we're prepared to plan for the next 50 years.
Governor Belisle's made roads a priority in his administration, and we've made progress then. But I just wonder if...
Of course, Richmond Paper still thinks it wasn't progress.
Is it possible to use that as a model for the future? I mean, that sort of gubernatorial leadership along with the Senate and the House.
The circumstances were a bit different in 86 politically at that time, but I think right now the issue of bonded indebtedness I think it'd be appropriately used so long as it's coupled with new or increased dedicated funding sources to service that debt. I think that really is the key to it. If we just rely on our capacity to borrow, as the federal government has done right now, it won't get us anywhere. We'll just be digging a hole for ourselves. But if in fact we identify a dedicated funding source that's additional to the revenue flow now, and then recognize inflationary pressures, we go ahead and do a limited amount of bonding, I think that would be appropriate. You accomplish the same goals, I guess, with the authorities that we're proposing to do in Hampton Roads in Northern Virginia, and I think we can extend those even to areas such as Charlottesville, Albemarle, perhaps, if you want to create regional authorities and give the ability to levy tolls. I'm certainly supportive of that. When you get into some of the other areas, it gets a little squishier, I guess, in terms of what authorities you grant. But the
problem is with tolls. Is tolls only work on certain kinds of facilities. And in areas like ours, I can't think of a single project that we have that we're looking at trying to get done that would be an appropriate toll project. Mm-hmm. But we would certainly, our preference is to have the state fund transportation in the traditional way and come up with some solutions for doing so. But in the absence of that, if we're going to look at giving localities the authority to raise money for projects they feel are imperative to accelerate, we would ask you to go beyond Northern Virginia and Tidewater and Richmond and at least extend it to the communities that are defined as high-growth communities.
Mm-hmm. Governor Blau's name was mentioned. He's still kicking around out there in the general area. But he worked up a paper.
He's here to have the
That's what I'm saying. He's in the general area. But he floated a document out a little over a year ago, which actually I'm still carrying with me today because I think it has some validity in terms of an aggressive statewide policy for tolling. I'm not talking about
all the interstates.
Numerous collection points and modest tolls,
yeah,
which can create that revenue flow. Because the mindset now is the political mindset is that no, we can't tax anybody for anything, but it's okay to put user fees on. And that's some of that's good, some of it's not so good. The elections for next year have already begun, as Cree was alluding to. There is a considerable faction out there in our society. It's not unique to Virginia, just are being led to believe that you can have whatever you want, but you really don't have to pay for it.
Right.
And that's where we have to get around. Some of that's legitimate. We all want to be conservative and keep taxes as low as we can. But that mentality that's out there is very evident, as you're all well aware. You've got to go out and make your case. And I guess Cree's talking about leadership. We're going to have to exercise that. But I think, and Steve reinforced that, it's an evolving process. We're going to come up with something, I think, this fall, hopefully, but that will not be totally satisfactory, but hopefully it'll be a step in the right direction. There is no appetite whatsoever for just saying, well, we need more money, so let's increase a particular tax. The fee structure is tricky, because it tends to try to not be user fees. It's a very tough one to address. I don't support the concept of user fees primarily because on paper you think you got money, but you're putting it on people who probably have the least ability to pay. It's an unfair burden for a parent whose child does something that when they took the poll he didn't realize he was going to be in that category. It's tough. I don't think the political climate is there to do much of anything in September, unfortunately. It's not a good analysis of it. And it's not because we don't have good people in both the House and Senate that are trying to figure out a way to deal with it. It's just, I think there is a genuine difference of opinion. And some of that was manifested in the debate that we had this past year when there was an attempt to take some of the general fund money and pull it over. I've got some ideas in terms of additional general funds that could come through the more equitable taxes, income tax and sales tax, that could free up another half a penny from the general fund that could be dedicated to transportation, since we already have a half a penny going to transportation trust fund. If you go to a series of some belt tightening in certain areas and make the case for why there is the need, I think the general public would accept that rather than just Charlottesville and Albemarle raising your gasoline tax or your sales tax regionally to accomplish that. I think it should be done statewide if we're going to do that. One area that gets me in trouble, but I think it makes an abundance of sense, I think Virginia needs to embrace the streamlined sales tax project, which will eventually lead to us being able to collect sales tax on remote sales, particularly the internet. We have uncollected money in that area right now, depending on who you talk to, somewhere in the range of $300 to $500 million. I think we ought to tap into. It's a matter of equity there. That's something that we could put on the table as a part of the total solution, which wouldn't hurt anybody because we're supposed to be paying that tax anyway. Nobody really pays it.
Supposed to pay it as a user of tax, and very few people pay it.
Senator, tell me if I've got these figures right. Is it a penny on the sales tax is $500 million? Is a penny on the sales tax how much is it?
A penny on the sales tax.
No, you're talking.
A penny on the sales tax is close to. Actually, each penny is about $1 billion. It's approaching $1 billion.
That's what your half cent.
Is about between $400 and $500 million. About $500 million.
If you got the streamline, that would almost make up for the money.
Right. This is something to have on the table because I think that would be absorbed without causing any heartburn.
As you said, it's a tax that's supposed to be being paid anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Dennis, one of the things I'd like to go back to something that Ken mentioned, and I don't think there's full recognition of it. Local leadership here has been really instrumental in pulling together innovative approaches to try to get some of these projects funded. When they referred to the strip from hydraulic to the 250 bypass, one of the issues that the legislature has dealt with is punitive legislation that was generated at Lynchburg and Danville. Basically focused on the Culpeper District, that effort was designed to say, well, they haven't done anything. Well, they haven't had the money to do anything, number one. Number two, you ought to be aware of what they've done. The portion of the road that they're talking about upgrading, adding a lane to, the southbound lane, is in the city. The county is talking to the Albemarle Place developer, looking at taking a county proper, improvements for road in the county, letting it go to the city to improve the road in the city because they don't have access for urban funding, which is part of what they have addressed in their handout. VDOT has been working, where can we find the funds, maybe safety funds, to upgrade the ramp that goes by Best Buy? So we put it together. It's an innovative, cooperative effort because the money's not there. You're trying to scotch tape projects together. One of the things that we fail to recognize, VDOT provided $1.8 million in technology money for an upgraded signalization system in the 29 corridor. It is astounding to come into this city in the morning, and it's green light, green light, green light, green light, and in the afternoon going out, you encounter the same process. That investment significantly increased the peak capacity travel time on 29. It was extremely beneficial, done with a small amount of money. My concern is I think we're tending to argue for long-term solutions, big dollar revenue. We've got to figure out some way where you can go to localities that have a situation like they have with Metacrete that is a 38-year-old road project where we have had the funding in place to build it a number of times, haven't gotten it done, and now, thanks to John Warner and community leadership, we now have the money to do the interchange, and we don't have the money to build the road, and we are about $7 million short when you look at the package. We've got to find a way to get that done. That'll take about 15,000 cars a day, local traffic off 29. What a benefit to the 29 corridor. You know, if we talk about protecting access, and perhaps the best example going locally is Hillsdale, the third project that Ken mentioned.
And they brought in the city, they brought together the developers with county and city leadership. The developers, the total package for that project is just north of $22 million to get that road done. It would extend it from Rio. Most of the road in the county is already constructed.
No, the parallel road. 29.
Yeah, parallel road to 29. Comes down. It would go through a shopping center, through a fourplex theater, and come out on Hydraulic. It opens up that triangular piece between 250, Hydraulic, and 29 in the city for development, which is extremely important in terms of producing tax revenue. But what really is important is that the developers have come to the table, and they're offering to put up $12.5 million worth of the $17 million in right-of-way to get it done. It means we have to work with the post office department. Here we are sitting with developers willing to give us right-of-way to cut through their projects, including existing improvements, to make that project happen. We don't have the resources to be able to make that happen. I mean, they're not there. We've got to find some way to create the revenue. When you have private individuals who are willing to step up to the plate, when you have local governments who are innovative and trying to provide that leadership, there is a responsibility on the state to step up and fulfill that responsibility. So I guess my frustration being on the Commonwealth Transportation Board is I see some of the issues that you address. I mean, we've tried to address some of the maintenance issues. We just, at the last session of the CTB, approved a contract for $10 million for the next 3 years to maintain a significant segment of Interstate 64. Supposedly, it is going to save us significant money. It includes snow removal. It includes general maintenance. It doesn't include construction. But it is a huge project for interstate maintenance for I-64. Well, if that's going to save us money, and we'll know, we've got to try some of these projects to see. There are innovative things that we can do. At the same time, we need to be able to rely on the legislature to fund a pool of money that allows us to do innovative things in the locality. And it goes back to what Dennis said, is if you have localities that are willing to work together, that are protecting a corridor or doing projects that have floundered because of the lack of revenue, there's got to be some pot of money there to give them the incentive to continue to want to work and allow the states. You know, some of them, I met with Wally Covington recently. I mean, I talk about the 29 corridor in Charlottesville, and I lay up here. They talk about traffic problems. They ought to look at the northern end of the 29 corridor going through Gainesville, where it took me an hour and 45 minutes to go 6 miles. That huge, huge problem. They're looking at local bond issues because of the failure of VDOT to fulfill their local needs. I mean, they're having to, and they're not the only district. I mean, Fairfax is already doing it. Certainly Loudoun is doing it. But I think it's one of the frustrations that when you sit where I sit on the CTB, you develop frustration. I've been there 4 years, and I thought at least one of the three projects that we focused on in Charlottesville would get done. The only projects that appear to be getting done are those that are developer financed because of proffers the county's negotiated. In the 29 corridor, It's the county that's held the developers' feet to the fire to make those projects happen to aid lanes to 29. That's the only thing. It's private money that's moved projects forward. So I think the frustration is real, and I think it's growing if there isn't some solution, however it's funded, that rewards those who are innovative, who work together. I think you're going to see that frustration continue to grow. And wherever it is in VDOT, I mean, that's what I have spent most of my time as a member of the CTB doing, is going to localities trying to put together money. A major frustration this year was the revenue sharing, and we've sort of glossed over that. Revenue sharing at $50 million would have done 50 projects, 50 jurisdictions, $1 million apiece is the maximum. Last year you had $65 million in request. $50 million spent out. Those are projects that occurred all over this district. It was the state transportation reaching out and making projects happen. This year, that money went back to $15 million in a three-tier system, which you get credit for how much you put into it. There isn't a jurisdiction in the Culpeper District who is going to be able to match the money that a Loudoun or a Prince William or a Stafford or Fairfax can put into it. Only 15 projects at $1 million apiece, and it's gone to jurisdictions that have significant money. The tier system may have worked at $50 million. It sure doesn't work equitably at 15. It sends it all to jurisdictions that have bond revenue that can access $1 million, cream it right, take the cream right off the top, and we don't have it. Somehow we need to find, because we had diverted, and I gave the legislature high credit for the $50 million pool, which generated another $50 million in local contribution, so you have $100 million in projects, and then all of a sudden, after a year, they pull it when you've gone to the localities and sold it to the localities for road construction. I mean, you said, here, you can get this project done in your community. You're talking about spending $1.2 million. Well, apply to the state. You'll get $600,000. You put up $600,000, you'll get the road built. Don't wait on your secondary funds to get it built. And the money disappears.
Very few projects tend to get the whole project done for the matching, out of the matching pool. So when you make it a 1-year deal, you get a piece of a project funded and then you're cut off. And that's what's happened here. We increased it to $50 million, and then the next year it got cut by 2/3. And so our expectation is we'll get nothing or $250,000. Of matching funds this year. Last year we got about, the cap was $1 million, but there were so many applications, we only got about $700,000. But before this year, year after year, it was $500,000. It was not a cap. It was, and to me, that's a preferable way to do it, to tell a locality, it's $1 million, it's five, whatever the number is. At least then you can count on, you can build into your budget. We've got a $3 million project, and we can, if it's $1 million, we can get that funded in a couple of years.
Well, what I liked was the multiplier effect, and you had projects going on. The town of Warrington, a turning lane. The town of Orange, a turning lane. We haven't had the money to do it. The town was putting up 50%, the state 50%, and all of a sudden it's gone. That possibility in there anymore because the funding got diverted. It's part of the frustration with the system and the consistency, and I think until we have that consistency, you're going to still have, the communities are still going to be frustrated, especially local government people who feel like there ought to be some assurance that they can rely on state funding.
Could we have a system like the developers offer properties to the locality? Could the state offer a property to the locality that works together to address a regional problem and have a proper system set up on cooperation with state revenue coming back to the locality?
And this is really what I was trying to get to, and I appreciate very much your eloquent description of what our problem is here. But we are working with land use issues here in Amarillo County, but a key element of that land use is the transportation piece of it. So we're out trying to kind of channel the growth into areas where we preserve our rural spaces. And yet those people now are getting high-density type neighborhoods, and they want some infrastructure, maybe in part of transportation, to do that. And that's the piece that's fallen upon us. So we're here now trying to do our part to combine land use and transportation, but we're missing the leg of our stool, and that's the support from the state that we need transportation from. So.
Well, just is at some point, what was the upshot of the punitive bill that did pass? I mean, it passed and then it repassed, kind of focused it in even closer on Charlottesville and Albemarle.
My understanding is that if there is a loss of revenue from the $40 million that's been expended on the right-of-way acquisition, then it needs to come out of the Culpeper District budget. Not out of Charlottesville, but out of the Culpeper District budget. You ought to be aware, I went to Whit Clement when I was appointed and said what I'd like to do is, because of the increase in value, is to sell it and use that money to improve the 29 corridor. And the Federal Highway Administration said, we'll let you do that. As long as you use that money in the 29 corridor, that works. What we found was the political reality was it couldn't be done. The political reality was that to the communities south, that looked like an abandonment of some of their economic development efforts, understood the political reality, so we stepped back from it and agreed that what we would do is look at trying to keep projects going in the 29 corridor without those funds, and that right-of-way would continue to sit there. What is amazing is there were only two no votes against that location for the 29 bypass here in the city. One of those was Mark Warner's when he was on the CTB, and he said, what you're doing is you're planning a road that development is going to outstrip, and when you get ready to build it, you're going to find you're not going to be able to get a bypass at all. What you're doing is constructing an internal road. That's exactly what's happened, because Hollymead Town Center, North Point, all the development in Greene County is all north of the terminus, and now in order to have a bypass, you'd have to start in Rutgersville. And you're sitting there with a road that's going to cost you $250 million to build a six-mile road. I mean, in reality, if we are honest with ourselves, we know that's a waste of money. We shouldn't build it. We ought to look at how do we take that resource, reuse it, and put the money where it does us some good. But I also understand the political realities in dealing with the legislative issues. So.
So at this point, at least, none of the money has been taken back out. There's been no.
Yeah. In fact, it was suggested that it was a political mistake to raise the issue. Therefore, I ought to just be quiet. So I shut up.
A rarity, as you know. A rarity.
It was on my list to ask you about.
That's right.
I hadn't heard the latest. No. Thank you.
I think some of it is at least invested in an appreciating asset at real estate prices.
Those houses in Squirrel Ridge are worth a whole lot more than being paid.
We have one other thing we want to mention real quickly. There is a handout dealing with a proposed piece of legislation that we would ask you to consider supporting. And it's got the color charts on it. And what this would enable is for primary road funding to be spent on a primary road that is within an urban jurisdiction if that road is part of the national highway system. In particular, Butch mentioned earlier, we have probably the most.
Apologize.
We appreciate you coming. Great, thank you. Probably the most clogged transportation artery in the county is the section of road from a section of Route 29 from Hydraulic Road with the 250 bypass. That's in the city. We have, as Butch mentioned, we have some significant transportation proffers from Albemarle Place, and we're looking to get some of those allocated from the developer to improving this stretch of road. But we're also going to need some state funds, especially for the ramp in front of Best, increasing the ramp in front of Best Buy by a lane. Together, I think that our transportation modeling indicates that will significantly improve the traffic flow in the entire 29 corridor, because we put this intelligent transportation system in from Airport Road down to Hydraulic Road, and it moves traffic very well until you get to that point. You actually lose a lane when you get to Hydraulic Road on 29. Now, the county is 8 lanes coming into there, and it narrows down. This bill would enable the state to use some primary road funds on a primary road that's in an urban area if it's part of the national highway system. That would enable some state funds for primary roads to be allocated to this stretch of road. There may be a few other localities that might benefit from this also, but hopefully this is not something that would have a lot of opposition, but it would enable us to possibly get a project funded that's extremely important in the area.
Can I ask a couple step back? I mean, general questions, not specific questions to this.
Sure.
I was looking around the table, and I might be the only one, aside from Ken, that lives on sort of the north side of town. I get an awful lot of requests for various projects and comments at this intersection and this problem, and this is where I get in trouble. I have to say that of all of those, and I bet there's hundreds, but certainly dozens, I've never heard this one. Is there a way that y'all have determined that this is of all the priorities that you want to have, that this is it? I mean, traffic models or road miles or something that?
Yes, we actually run traffic models throughout the area. We look at scenarios where you improve a road, don't improve a road, what happens with the volume to capacity ratio on the road. We try to allocate our transportation dollars locally based upon an analysis of what kind of transportation improvement we'll achieve for the dollar spent. Rob, we have really two things we're trying to do with the 29 corridor that they're on the road itself, in addition to the parallel roads that, you know, we're working on. One is to increase the to add the lanes on 29 north of South Fork,
right,
so that we complete the gap up to Hollywood Town Center. And that's and I'm sure you probably have people comment on that, and that's something that's in our plan. I think that we actually may obtain some funds for that. Butch has been working very closely with us to try to get that done. And then the most clogged part of 29 is from Hydraulic down to the 250 bypass. In my area, I have a lot more comments on that particular stretch of road than I do any stretch of road in the county. And if you look at the traffic modeling, that will do more to move traffic in the corridor than any single improvement that we've looked at for the dollar spent.
Maybe, again, try not to use anecdotal and personal experiences to guide something that's this important, but this wouldn't affect the cars coming in from Crozet. It wouldn't affect the cars coming in from Glenmore. It wouldn't affect all of us who come down 29 and go downtown on Rio or Hydraulic. It wouldn't affect all the people coming up from Fifth Street, instead of the KL. I guess I'm trying to visualize. Well, I mean, this will affect all the cars driving through Charlottesville. I mean, that sort of through right. Traffic from 250 to 29, or coming south on 29, kind of getting on the 250 bypass and taking it around. But,
well, I'll give you an idea of the traffic numbers. The traffic numbers in 29 in front of Hollymead South, right. Forest Lake South, today is around 30,000 vehicles a day.
Okay.
The traffic numbers on 29 at Hydraulic Road are over 60,000 a day. Okay. We were trying to get that gap filled in the area in front of Forest Lake South. That's important to us. But you actually have twice as much traffic at the drive down to the 250 bypass.
Where is that? I'm trying to visualize. I mean, obviously the biggest concerns are during rush hour, evening and morning. And are these people who are working at the university coming from sort of generally north of town, sort of the where you live, all the Rio development, both sides of Rio, all the way up to, I mean, is that the, because it's not the people coming downtown.
Well, actually, there are a number of people that go downtown that get to go
from the north. I mean, the north would all peel off before then.
No, but most of the traffic that we have to understand is this: the traffic in the 29 corridor is 90% local,
right?
10% through. And again, you can look at the traffic numbers, but the traffic numbers are double in that stretch what they are out by Forest Lake South today, right. And the traffic. Actually backs up from the 250 bypass out 29 through the red light at Hydraulic and 29. And you have people that can't even move through the red light on 29 headed south because the traffic is backed up into the.
But there'd be about a. I mean, there'd be people coming from Crozet going north to shop. There'd be people coming from where you live, Rob, going to Barracks Road and go to the university. There's truck traffic going to Lynchburg using that strip, right. Even though it's not. The volumes that you're discussing that are local, I mean, tremendous numbers of people use it for all kinds of reasons at all kinds of times.
What our strategy is to do really two things in the 29 corridor to create a good network of local connector roads around 29 on the east and west so that more local traffic can move where they want to go without getting on 29. And the second is to make sure the flow on 29 for through traffic is reasonable. And this all of our traffic modeling, Rob, indicates that this is an extremely important piece of road to improve.
I'm sure this is true, but let me just ask. I assume you don't have five projects and put money against each of them. In other words, you have some way that you can sort of say we've got $5 million, we're not going to put $1 million into each until each of them reach, but you somehow can prioritize it in a way that when one of them finally gets enough money, you can build it. I assume. But I mean,
we were kind of doing that with
Medical
Parkway.
Okay.
Yeah, we've.
I'm curious. I don't know the answer.
Well,
to that.
The answer to that is we have about probably six or seven projects that are actually getting some funding for completion. So we don't put all of our money into one project. We may do that.
Is there a way that you, I'm just thinking it's silly to have six unmade, not silly, I mean, it would seem to be counterproductive to have six halfway done projects if you have the money for three to finish. Is there some something that would enable that to happen? Or?
Dennis, well, yes. I mean, what we've done in the last, well, all I can say is since I've been on the board, we have reduced the number of projects. We've done just what you suggested.
Thank you.
Sorry, just to interrupt. I was project director of it. And just to quickly answer your question, this was the top priority of the 2019 project that was initiated, commissioned by Commissioner Kemp. We had every VDOT staffer who wanted to say anything about it, city, county, outside consultants. This was, from a technical end, the absolute agreement that this would provide the most improvement on Route 29. Including for the downtown community, because that, when it's clogged there, it's clogged for quite a ways. When we ran through the public process, this was, again, the top priority. The only time I've seen Chamber of Commerce, environmental groups, transit riders, commuters, everybody agreed that, that this one project would unclog that area. So both from technical end and public support, it was the top priority of that 20-50 project. And the modeling, which was done, you know, reviewed by VDOT Central Office, it all says this is the one that's going to work.
Our modeling is done. We use VDOT. We use the VDOT provided assumptions, traffic generation assumptions, for determining traffic modeling. We've taken a little longer than I had said we would, and I apologize for that. Is there anything anyone else would like to add at this point? No, we want to thank you for coming. We hope that the upcoming session is successful and hope that we get some improvement in transportation funding. Thank you.